All right. President Tajani and honorable members, you've raised a lot of important questions, and I'm going to try to use the remainder of our time to get through as many of them as I possibly can. A number of you asked questions around inappropriate content on Facebook in one form or another, whether that's hate speech or bullying or terrorism or different content, and how that relates to this, or fake accounts, and how this relates to this position and philosophy of needing to take a broader responsibility. First, let me be clear. The bottom line here is that hate speech, bullying, terror, violence, all this content has no place on our services. But in order to really execute that, we need to upgrade and do a better job of executing our policies. So if you look back at the history of how we've operated, and when I got started in my dorm room in college, because it was just me and because we didn't have the AI tools at the time to be able to go look through a lot of the content and understand what was in violation of our community standards and what wasn't, our policy for most of the history of the company has been to have our community flag things for us and then us to look at them reactively. So if someone sees something that they thought might be hate speech or bullying, they would flag that, and then we would look at that. And we've built up teams to manage that. But now we think that our responsibility is greater. And now, sitting here in 2018, we have the ability to start developing more AI tools, which I'll get to in a moment, some more detail, to be able to flag more of the content up front. And now, as a big company, we also have the ability to employ tens of thousands of people to go review more of this content. So if you look, for example, at terror content, one of the things that I'm proud of is that our AI systems have now can flag 99% of the ISIS and Al-Qaeda related content that we end up taking down before any person in our community flags that for us. Another example is around bullying. We had this really unfortunate set of incidents when we first launched Facebook Live, where we saw that people were harming themselves or committing suicide on Live. And we realized that we needed to do a much better job of addressing that quickly. So we built AI tools and tools to determine if someone was thinking about harm or suicide, hired 3,000 people to make it so that the response time that we could get to those live videos is now less than 10 minutes. And that has been one area where we've been able to significantly improve. But we're basically going through each of these areas, starting from the areas that are the most sensitive and have the highest risk of harm, terror, bullying, self-harm, election integrity, which is obviously extremely important, are prioritizing them first. But our goal over the coming years is going to get to developing the AI systems and hiring the staff necessary to be able to proactively review more of the content as it's coming into the system. We'll never be perfect on this. You know, our adversaries, especially on the election side, people who are trying to interfere, will have access to some of the same AI tools that we will. So it's an arms race, and we'll need to constantly be working to stay ahead. But our vision for how we should manage the system is going to move from one of reactive management as people in our community flag things to one where we're more proactively having systems look at the content, flag things for tens of thousands of people to review. And we're already making significant progress in doing that. Now, a number of you mentioned specifically issues around fake news. So I want to talk a little bit about our roadmap for addressing this, because the bottom line here is that nobody on Facebook or off Facebook wants fake news, right? No one will sit here and say that they want the information that they see to be false. So, you know, we've broken down the problem, and do we think that there are three main sources of content that are problematic here? The first is just spam, which I touched on a little bit in my opening statement. And this is, it's often, you know, it's not politically motivated or ideologically motivated, it's economically motivated. It's people who are just trying to make money by coming up with the most sensationalist content they can and putting it out there. So the way you fight this is the same roadmap that companies have used to fight email spam. You take away these spammers' profit motive, and then they go do something else. And we've done a number of things, like preventing them from using Facebook ads, decreasing the distribution to do this. The second category is fighting fake accounts. Because what we found is that when people are using fake accounts on our system, there's less accountability. And they're more likely to spread bad information, misinformation, interact in ways that are interfering in elections and things like that. So we develop systems both to identify fake accounts as they're being registered. And we just released a transparency report where we said that we took down, I think it was in the first quarter of this year, about 580 million fake accounts, the vast majority within minutes of being registered, as our systems are able to identify that well. We also have a significant operation which is working on identifying fake accounts that get through that initial filter, so we can identify them all once they're in the Facebook community. Our best estimate today, I think, is that it's a single-digit percent of the accounts, but we're constantly working on improving our tools to be able to identify that, and that's extremely important as well. So you have spammers, you have fake accounts. The last category is people who are well-meaning, but just happen to share something that is provably false. And there, you know, we don't want to be in a position as Facebook of saying what is true or false. We think that that's not the right position for us to be in. So we want to work with third-party fact checkers, and we're public with who all the fact checkers are, to one of the questions that there was earlier. And if a number of third-party fact checkers all identify that a piece of news is provably false, then we'll append something to the story to make sure that we show more related content so that people can have a more rounded view or understand that fact checkers have marked that story is true, and we'll try to show it less. Now, we're trying to roll that out around the world. That requires having specific fact-checking partners in every country and in every language. So we're constantly rolling out more each month. And we have a lot more to do here, and we know that there's a lot more to do there. All right. Then there were a number of questions around elections. So I know that there are a lot of important elections coming up in Europe. You know, I think in 2019 and 2018, there were elections in Slovenia and Sweden, Latvia, Estonia, Belgium, Poland, and of course the European Parliament. And this is one of our top priorities as a company, is just making sure that we prevent anyone from trying to interfere in elections like the Russians were able to in the U.S. Presidential election in 2016. And I outlined some of the roadmap for that earlier. The game plan is a combination of building more AI tools to identify fake accounts that are trying to interfere and take them down, like we did in the French presidential election, where we identified and took down more than 30,000 accounts, a playbook of closer operation and cooperation with federal election commissions, like we executed in the German elections in 2017, and increased transparency, which we think is going to be very important. You know, if you have the ads that every political actor or advertiser is trying to run to every audience be public, then there's just more accountability. And if someone is trying to do that as a fake account, it becomes more apparent. If someone as a legitimate political actor is just sending different messages to different groups, that will be transparent. So we think that greater accountability is important. And that set of transparency tools that we're building, we're going to be rolling out around the world globally this summer. So we're optimistic about that. We think that there's probably more to do to add on to those after the first version, but we think that first version is going to take us quite far as well. So then there were a number of questions about regulation. Some of the questions asked how I view regulation. I don't think the question here is whether or not there should be regulation. I think the question is, what is the right regulation? I think the internet is becoming increasingly important in people's lives. Some sort of regulation is important and inevitable, and the important thing is to get this right, and to make sure that we have regulatory frameworks that help protect people, that are flexible so that they allow for innovation, that don't inadvertently prevent new technologies like AI from being able to develop, and of course to make sure that new startups, so the next student sitting in a college dorm room like I was 14 years ago doesn't have an undue burden on being able to build the next great products. So we know that's really important, and that's an ongoing conversation that we look forward to participating in. There were a couple of questions around competition and how we view our role and our position as a platform here. And to that, I'd say a few things. One is, first is that we exist in a very competitive space where people use a lot of different tools for communication. Where the average person uses about 8 different tools for communication, ranging from all sorts of private messaging, up to more broadcast mediums, to things where they're communicating with groups of people and all of their friends at once. So from where I sit, it feels like there are new competitors coming up every day. There are competitors that reach tens and hundreds of millions of people. And we're constantly needing to evolve our service in order to stay relevant and serve people well. So that feels like it's a competitive environment where there are many choices that people have. On the business side, the business model is advertising. Facebook today is about 6% of the global advertising market. So clearly advertisers also have a lot of choice in terms of where they choose to advertise. And that's an important lens to look at it from as well, although I think that you want to look at it both from the consumer choice perspective and the business choice. One thing that I want to add that I think often gets overlooked when you talk about competition is, around the world there are 70 million small businesses that use Facebook's tools to grow and reach customers. And in Europe alone, there are about 18 million small businesses that use Facebook tools. And as I said in my opening statement, about half of them have told us that they are hiring more people because of their use of our tools to be able to grow. So I think it's important not to lose track of, when you're thinking about competition, that there's the element in the internet space and in the advertising space, but there's also the extremely pro-competitive effect of enabling all these small businesses to now have access to the same kinds of marketing and advertising tools and be able to reach customers in sophisticated technological ways that previously only large businesses had the means to do. And that's something that we're very proud of, that we can provide as something that levels the playing field. And I think when you're thinking about the overall ecosystem and competition there, I think that that's a very important part to take into account. There were a number of questions about taxes, so I want to touch on that briefly as well. Facebook has always paid taxes in all of the countries where we have operations set up. We pay all taxes required by law, and we invest heavily in Europe. Right? We're going to have more than 10,000 employees across Europe in 12 cities by the end of this year. We have data centers already in Sweden and Ireland, and we're building another one in Denmark that's going to be online in 2020. We've always paid the taxes that the law requires, and we're making significant investments in terms of helping to build the economies in the countries here and to contribute to the innovation and job growth here as well. All right, let me see what else is there. Okay, there were a few questions about GDPR. The principles here are around control, transparency, and accountability. The idea, a number of you asked it when we expect to be fully compliant with GDPR regulations. We do expect to be fully compliant on May 25th, so in 3 days from now. We've had a large team working on this inside Facebook to make sure that we're compliant. And one of the things that we've wanted to make sure in rolling this out is, because one of the things that the law requires here in Europe is that someone has to go through these extensive flows before they can use the service starting on May 25th. And one of the pieces of feedback that we got from people in the community was that they didn't want to get roadblocked before being able to go see their friends' content, right? If you're coming to Facebook because you want to share something, the last thing that we want is for someone to go through the flows quicker than they need to and just click OK or no on a bunch of stuff because they just want to blow through that in order to get to what they were trying to do. So we've actually been rolling out the GDPR settings and flows for a while now, and a large percent of Europeans have already gone through them, and we've basically put the flows in front of people and given them the opportunity to dismiss them. Starting on May 25th, we will start requiring people to go through the flows before they can resume using our services. So a large percent of people, dozens of percents, have gone through the flows already, and we've gotten good feedback on that and how we've implemented that so far. Let me see if there's anything else that is important to touch on. There were a couple of questions about political bias that I want to touch on, because I think that this is a very important topic. As a couple of you mentioned, we are committed to being a platform for all ideas. That means that we want to make it so that people can come to our service and share any idea across the political spectrum. It's very important to me that we're a service that allows for a wide variety of political discourse. We view that as a big part of our responsibility, and I can commit to you here today that we have never and will not make decisions about what content is allowed or how we do ranking on the basis of a political orientation. So that's an important philosophical point for me that I'm proud to be able to commit to. There was a specific point around distribution and reduction of seeing people's content. And on that, what I'd just say is we've made a number of changes this year to make sure that we're showing people's friends and family and community content more than public content in general. So a lot of the feedback that we've heard from people is that they come to Facebook because they want to stay connected to people. We've also done a lot of well-being research. This wasn't a topic that came up today, but we're very focused on making sure that people's use of technology is good for people's well-being and is not taking away from it in some way. And all the research that we have shows that when you're using the internet to stay connected to people that you care about, that's good for your well-being. It's correlated with measures like increased measures of health and happiness and feeling more connected and less alone over time. But when you're just using Facebook or the internet overall to read news or passively consume videos, that isn't correlated with those same benefits to well-being. So because of that and because of feedback that we've received, we've made a number of shifts to the services to promote connecting with people's friends and family and communities more than public content. So that has led to reductions in distribution for public content, video, news, across the board, and is not targeting any specific political ideology. Is there anything else here?
Shadow profiles.
Compensation.
To your question, for the content that websites and apps send us, we think it's very important that people have the ability to clear this. So we just launched or just announced that we're building and will soon launch this clear history feature that allows you to clear all basic browsing history data. To your point about earlier around how do we separate out the security data, it's very important that we don't have people who aren't Facebook users coming to our service and trying to scrape the public data that's available. So one of the ways that we do that is, people use our service and even if they're not signed in, we need to understand how they're using the service to prevent bad activity. And that's, a big theme of today has been around making sure that we can do a better job of governing the system, keeping bad content out. One of the ways that we do that is by understanding how people are using the system.
But if you're not a Facebook user, how do you stop that data being transferred?
On a security side, we think it's important to keep it to protect people in our community. Were there any other themes that we want to get through? I mean, there's what's...
About how you make sure that Cambridge Analytica wouldn't happen again.
Right, that's good. So there were a number of questions around whether Cambridge Analytica was the tip of the iceberg, or whether we expect there to be more apps that have misused data. On this... the good news with Cambridge Analytica is that the changes that we made back in 2014 would prevent a new app like Cambridge Analytica wasn't an app. It was an app developer who used the platform and then sold the data to Cambridge Analytica, which is a whole other thing. But it wouldn't be possible for an app developer to get access to that level of data since after our 2014 platform changes went into effect. But because there were a lot of different apps that were using the system before 2014 and before the changes went into effect in 2015, we think it's important now to go back and investigate every single app that had access to a large amount of people's personal data before we locked down the platform. So that's what we're in the process of doing. We've already investigated thousands of apps, and as I said earlier, we've taken down more than 200. There are many thousands more that we need to investigate. This is going to take many months. I do anticipate that there are going to be other apps that we find that we're going to want to take down, and this is why we're going now and doing this full investigation. This is part of our shift towards not just trying to manage the system reactively of having, we've always had the ability for people in our community to flag apps that they thought were bad actors to us, and then we would look at them. We've had the ability to, and we've done audits of apps in the past. We've had a content review and app review team. But now what we're doing is taking a much more proactive approach. So rather than waiting for people in the community to flag for us that there may be issues, we are going through and investigating ourselves upfront all the different apps that had access to a large amount of information. We are upfront reviewing every app that asks for access to additional people's information. And anywhere where we see any concerns, we're going to bring in third-party auditors to conduct a full audit to determine if there was any misuse of people's personal information. And if there was, we will ban those apps and tell everyone who is affected. I want to be sensitive to time because we are 15 minutes over the scheduled meeting. I think that I realize that there were a lot of specific questions that I didn't get to specifically answer, but you know, going around and hearing the themes of what people are concerned about and had questions about, I think I was able to address the high level areas in each, and I'll make sure that we follow up with each of you afterwards to make sure that your specific questions get addressed, and we're going to have someone come to do a full hearing soon to answer more of the technical questions as well. So thank you again for inviting
me. Mr. Zuckerberg,
I
think
me.
There was one question raised by Guy Verhofstadt, and that's linked to my question, and that's the separation of different services. And I think it's a very important question in this round, the market power of Facebook, and the question if you cross-use, for example, data between Facebook and WhatsApp. So it would be good if you say at least one word to that.
Will you allow users to escape targeted advertising? I mean, I asked you six yes and no questions. I got not a single answer. Yep. And of course, well, you asked for this format, well, for a reason.
Okay. I'll make sure we follow up and get you answers to those.
Okay, I think I want to ask you if it's possible to have right answer for any question from,
yes, of course,
from you,
yes,
in the next days.
Why not written answers? So I think that everybody of us can provide you or questions because
we have all well prepared our interventions, so we have them on paper. We could, Mr. President, you collect them, you give them to the team of Mr. Zuckerberg or Mr. Zuckerberg himself, and we receive written answers on it. Because let's be honest, I have not so much. I don't think that the right way is to say, and now we're going to put it in Libya and so on. No, there are a number of questions that have been put by other colleagues that I want an answer to. That said, I'm anxious of this new, brave new world that Mr. Zuckerberg has presented us. A brave new world where tens and tens of thousands of private people are scrutinizing us and are saying what is fake news, what is not fake news, what is hate speech, what is not hate speech.
Mr.
Don't
President,
you think that it is a public task?
We need the continuation of this discussion in this format as well as in the Liebe format. This is very obvious.
No, I think, first of all,
collecting the
question. Right. Okay. Is it possible to have answer question by question to have a right answer by Mr. Zuckerberg in the next days for every question?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, competition, for example, or European antitrust thing, that's important. Do we need, yes, I think we're going to push our antitrust agency to go into this if there is not a good answer to.
I think the problem is the timing. For me, for me, it's possible to say, but there is a flight. But I think if Mr.
There is no flight. I come from France. Yes.
Okay.
There are strikes. That's the only thing.
Sorry, I think this is the format. If do you agree, Mr. Zuckerberg, for right answer in the next days for a question by question? It's possible to have a right answer.
The questions that weren't answered today.
Yes, you have the question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.